DW Africa Link.
That's right. This is Africa Link program live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. Today, you're with me, Jane Nyingi.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Please feel free to engage with us and give us your input on these stories we are covering. Coming up, the long-awaited African Free Trade Agreement comes into force, targeting a market of 1.2 billion people.
This deal is going to be historic. It's going to open up trade across Africa. It's going to create opportunities. It's going to get young people that have very creative minds to be able to provide services and products across the continent.
South Sudan reacts angrily to a decision by the UN Security Council to renew sanctions despite pleas from other African countries not to do so.
Despite all these threats, we'll continue to negotiate in good faith so that we bring a lasting peace.
We also have the latest on the Hungary boat crash that has raised question on how it happened.
We have that and much more from across Africa and beyond coming right up after these world news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán has asked for a thorough investigation into a boat accident on the River Danube in central Budapest that killed at least seven people earlier this week. The 64-year-old Ukrainian captain of the 135-meter, four-story Viking River cruise ship has been taken into custody for questioning. His ship had collided with a much smaller boat carrying South Korean tourists on a sightseeing trip, causing the smaller vessel to capsize. The number of dead is expected to rise as 21 people are still missing. Seven people have survived. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has met with German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Foreign Minister Heiko Maas on his first visit to Berlin. The trip came amid fraught relations between the two countries caused by the isolationist policies of U.S. President Donald Trump. Merkel listed a number of international topics on the agenda.
First of all, there's the issue of Iran and the question of how to prevent Iran from coming into possession of nuclear weapons. We will talk about Afghanistan, where we both have a considerable number of troops stationed. We will talk about the situation in Syria and, of course, the very fragile situation in Libya.
U.S. President Donald Trump has slapped fresh 5% tariffs on all goods coming into the U.S. from Mexico. Trump said he would regularly increase the tariffs until Mexico was able to stop people illegally crossing into the U.S. via the country's shared border. The U.S. president has accused the Mexican government of failing to act over groups of Central American asylum seekers who transit through Mexico from countries including El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala on their way to the U.S. You're listening to DW News. The leader of Malawi's main opposition, the Malawi Congress Party, has rejected the results of the country's May 21 election. At a press conference in the capital Lilongwe, Dr. Lazarus Chakwera said the vote had been marred by irregularities.
I, Lazarus Chakwera, reject MEC's fraudulent presidential results. And I join all Malawians in rejecting that MEC's declaration of Mutharika as the winner represents the will of Malawians who cast their vote. I have started filing a petition to the High Court of Malawi to nullify MEC's presidential results and declare the presidential elections of May 21, 2019 void.
Malawi's president, Peter Mutharika, began his second five-year term with a tough stance against corruption and a pledge to revive the country's economy. The body of former Democratic Republic of Congo opposition leader and former Prime Minister Etienne Tshisekedi has been returned to his home country from Brussels 2 years after his death. Thousands of people gathered in the capital Kinshasa as Tshisekedi's casket, draped in the national flag, arrived for a memorial ceremony to be held on Saturday. Tshisekedi was the face of the DRC's opposition for decades, as well as a fierce critic of former President Joseph Kabila, until his death from a pulmonary embolism in February 2017 in the Belgian capital, aged 84. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Ipora Nyambura.
And I'm Jen Nyinge. We are also live on our partner radio stations across the continent and, of course, our Facebook page, DW Africa. So we are eagerly waiting to hear from you.
And we start off with the big story of the day. The long-awaited African Free Trade Agreement has come to force. The deal that has been termed as the world's largest targets a market of 1.2 billion people. The African Union, which has been championing for free trade, says it's meant to take advantage of a booming young population and boost intra-African trade.
The trade agreement has so far been ratified by 24 countries, in exception of two economic powers, Nigeria and South Africa. But what does this deal mean to the people in the continent? A question that I pose to Mohamed Jagana, a former president of Gambia Chamber of Commerce and Industry.
This deal is going to be historic. It's going to open up trade across Africa. It's going to create opportunities. It's going to get young people that have very creative minds to be able to provide services and products across the continent. Because today, if an entrepreneur is sitting in Kenya or Gambia or somewhere else, they're not looking at their political borders. They're looking at the economic opportunities across the whole continent of 54 countries. We hope that it would work because you have 54 countries with different legislations, different border posts, and all of those have to We have to figure out how do we bring down all those border posts to make free movement of goods the reality.
You've pointed out that we need to figure out how it's going to work this time round. What's unique about the agreement? Because we still have trade bodies like ECOWAS, COMESA and East African Community, but not much has been achieved in easing trade and movement of people in the continent.
Well, unfortunately, our politicians and leaders go to these forums and sign pacts, but they forget that the implementation is not properly designed or looked into. And we hope that it is now for the private sector to push through for a proper implementation strategy. Otherwise, it will be just what we have here in ECOWAS and other regions of West Africa on paper, but the reality is still being frustrated by officials.
We all agree it's an important milestone, but countries like Nigeria and South Africa, two large economies in the continent, have opted out. What does this tell us?
Well, I think both Nigeria and South Africa are looking more inward rather than looking at the external opportunities their companies or their industries have across Africa. And I think that is something that really they need to factor in the dynamics, because today, when you're looking at Africa, the population is growing. We have a very youthful population. So there could be huge opportunities for industries within Africa.
Do you see winners and losers in the whole deal?
Oh, I think everybody could be a winner. I'm not sure whether there's any losers. Everybody could be a winner because small countries like Gambia could benefit. Because today, with this kind of opportunity and ECOWAS, we should not focus on Gambia as a population of 2 million. We can look at a population of 300 million or a billion because we have opportunity to do trading across Africa. So I think it will be a win-win situation for the whole continent. I'm not sure whether we should classify it as losers. And also the citizens and consumers of Africa could benefit in terms of better pricing for goods that are being produced locally because of the capacity.
Mohamed Jagana, former president of Gambia Chamber of Commerce and Industry. NZP, a lot of reactions on our Facebook page.
Yes, we did ask, could these make Africa great? And Marot Ndeso says, as ambitious as this is, which I hope with all my heart that it works, I believe there are just too many challenges. He says, look at the Africa Union, for instance. The majority of the member states are a mess. Yet they've come together hoping to have a functioning entity. And he goes on to say, it's almost like a bunch of men who beat their wives coming together to form an organization that empowers women. Very funny outlook there from Marot Ndeso.
Absolutely. Louise Jakoi says, I honestly hope it works.
And Celestine Karaoke says, yes, the international community will have it easy to do business in Africa. Thank you very much for your comments. Moving on now, the captain of a cruise ship that collided with a small tour boat packed with South Korean tourists on the Danube in Hungary on Wednesday has been arrested. So far, seven people have been confirmed dead.
Now, South Korea's foreign minister arrived in Budapest today to pay her respect to the victims and to get an update on the search rescue missions, as DW's Stefan Bos tells us from Budapest.
Well, she is also looking for answers. Of course, she was here to pay her respect But she also made it very fast clear that she really wants answers. There is some concern that those communications were not good, knowing that usually these vessels have also GPS equipment as well as other perhaps satellite equipment, if you will. So they are definitely looking into that.
The search mission is still going on for the 21 people who are still missing following that boat tragedy. Stefan, can you tell us if this has now turned to a recovery mission or is there still hope for rescuing more people?
Well, officially they have not yet called it a recovery operation as far as I know, but of course every hour there is little hope that they will find, in fact, survivors. As a matter of fact, it is expected that the death toll will rise to at least 28. It's also interesting to realize that many people are believed to be in the boat that sunk in 7 seconds. And it is expected that at least some bodies will be found there as well. And of course, other bodies may never be found Unfortunately, other people are killed. That's what they believe now, including most likely a 6-year-old girl.
DW's Stefan Bos there in Budapest. Let's now go back to Africa. And South Sudan government has reacted angrily to the United Nations Security Council decision to renew its sanctions on the country for another year, despite resistance from African countries, Russia and China.
The sanctions include an arms embargo, assets freezes, and travel bans on some officials over their role in the country's civil war, now heading towards its sixth year. A U.S. drafted resolution received 10 yes votes, one more than the minimum required for adoption. With more is James Shimanyula.
Expressing anger at the United Nations Security Council's renewal of an arms embargo on South Sudan, Information Minister Michael Makuei said the decision was against peace and aimed at weakening the government's fight against rebels.
Despite all these threats, we'll continue to negotiate in good faith so that we bring a lasting peace.
As Makuei reacted sharply to the UN decision, South Sudan President Salva Kiir, who is in Kenya for a short visit, admitted that fresh fighting is taking place in the country.
We are fighting now. And what are we fighting for? Power. That I want to become the president. I want to become the president. And the result is that innocent lives have been lost.
Speaking from an undisclosed location southwest of the capital Juba, former South Sudanese General Thomas Cirilo, whose loyal fighters are locked in a fierce fight with President Salva Kiir's troops, had this to say.
We are under attack and we are sustaining casualties. The government is shelling all the villages and our people are running in the bushes. Our people, some of them are crossing the border to Congo. We are using every means to defend ourselves.
The fresh fighting in South Sudan coincides with the United Nations Security Council's renewal of the arms embargo, with the abstention of China, Russia, Ivory Coast, Equatorial Guinea, and South Africa. South Africa's representative to the UN, Jerry Matthews Magila, pointed out that embargo will not change the current situation in South Sudan.
Making peace has never been, nor will it be ever, be an easy task. We remain concerned with the precarious humanitarian situation in South Sudan.
Germany's representative to the United Nations, Christoph Hussen, echoed remarks that reflected the UN Council's fear of more weapons flowing into South Sudan.
Germany thinks the money saved on weapons would be much better spent on improving the justice system so that the perpetrators who commit sexual crimes would be brought to justice.
The war in South Sudan has killed tens of thousands, uprooted more than one-third of South Sudan's 14 million people, and has seen horrific levels of sexual violence along with the brutal attacks on civilians.
James Shimanyula with that report. And a quick comment here from Mike Napo. He says, let there be peace in that country.
And Matiangai says, this will speed up the peace process in South Sudan. Thank you very much for your comments. Stick here in DW Africa.
This is Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jean Nyinge.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome once again to all of you listening to us also on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I see Solomon Chima writing to us there and many more. We are still waiting for your feedback and comments on these stories we are covering today.
Absolutely. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Sudanese authorities force television network Al Jazeera Khartoum Bureau to close as protests continue in Sudan.
We want a civilian government that would guarantee our rights as women and that would guarantee us a decent living in a state of citizenship with rights and duties.
Not to forget our sports segment today discussing about the eagerly awaited All-English European Champions League football final.
But first, Uganda has made a fresh appeal for funding for the resettlement of refugees despite the ongoing scandal over international donor funds for the purpose and for which it is unable to account.
Germany and Britain are withholding the funds it pledged to Uganda because of the scandal. Our reporter Alex Jita says the donor frustration led to the funding shortfall, which affects the lives of people who fled countries such as the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan.
I'm in a Shivale refugee camp in southwestern Uganda. Majority of the refugees here are from the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Many children remain at home despite schools in Uganda reopening this week. Majority of them don't meet the school requirements because primary education is free in Uganda, but non-Ugandans are not eligible. However, in some camps, children are educated free of charge by the government in conjunction with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Because of the lack of funding, some camp schools have been forced to close. Refugee camp schools are not the only ones affected. Sunny Mukunde is a 17-year-old, and her quality of life has drastically changed.
Challenges of school, studies are always hard because we are not nationals of this country. There is payment of school fees. I lack soap for bathing. I lack pads for using.
The funding gap has grown wider, and the Uganda government and the UNHCR launched a campaign this week to ask for more support. They need at least $972 million for this year's needs alone. Joel Buturur is UNHCR's country representative in Uganda.
We need resources so that we can continue this job. Otherwise, we run the risk of, in fact, not being able to sustain the efforts. And this could create, you know, I think, a very problematic situation on the ground.
But this call for more money comes after big donors like Germany and the United Kingdom pulled their support over accountability concerns. Four officials within the Ugandan government were implicated in a February 2018 investigation for misusing donor funds. UNHCR says they have been working with the government to address accountability concerns. Jens Hesman is a UNHCR field coordinator.
The priority of all the partners is accountability. We're accountable to refugees to deliver services meeting their rights and their needs. Obviously also accountable to donors to ensure that funding is value for money and is used in the right way. And we've been working over the last months together with the donors, with the government and the partners on strengthening the accountability systems.
Accountability is a touchy subject, and the Uganda government's lack of action against the corrupt officials speaks volumes. However, Musa Echweru, Uganda's State Minister for Relief and Disaster Preparedness, is confident such practices will never happen again.
The truth is that this was a very bad setback, but a setback that we have seen very clearly. I can assure you it will never happen again. That somebody can go and exaggerate the figures of refugees and want us to look after that zone and so forth. It will never happen again.
Uganda is currently hosting just over 1.2 million refugees, and this number is expected to grow to 1.3 by the end of 2020.
Alex Gitter with that report.
And we did ask on our Facebook page, should the international community release funds to Uganda again? And Tom Segendo says, not now for sure. They need to come clean and show transparency fast.
We have this one from Joseph Olumi, who says, I change government first.
And Melsi Kishinga says, yes, Museveni is doing good in this area. Why not support him? Come on, United Nations and other rich countries. Don't you see how Museveni is helping the refugees?
So tell us what you think by heading on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and drop us a line.
For sure. And now we move on to Sudan. Sudanese authorities have shut down news broadcaster Al Jazeera's Khartoum office and banned its journalists from reporting in the country following protests demanding the military rulers step aside.
Sudan is being run by the Transitional Military Council since longtime ruler President Omar al-Bashir was ousted last month. The protesters had originally been calling for al-Bashir to go, but are now demanding the military rulers to cede power and allow a civilian government. Here is Selo Neko with more.
Blame the Transitional Military Council for the death of the people, accusing the army of using force to disperse the crowds. However, the military council says the protests are now threatening public safety. The commander of the military area, Major General Baha Mohammed, explains.
The political negotiations between the protesters and the military council are continuing. The situation we are now seeing near the army's headquarters, which they now call Colombia, is unacceptable. I hope that our brothers at the sit-in will be honest with us. If they call this a peaceful act, then this is a big problem. We have to distinguish between what is peaceful and what is against the law.
Sharaf al-Din Ahmed Adam is one of the activists behind the protests. He says despite all that, the protests will continue.
The entire Sudanese population is now reacting very positively to the strike. It is the last option after the revolution. We have been responding just by the civil disobedience. This will go on until the military council responds to our demands of the Sudanese revolution movement and the people. The main demands are further negotiations with us and the transfer of power to the government.
The protesters are determined to stand fast until their needs are met.
The sit-in here is aimed at lobbying for a national unity government. When the government says that the sit-in causes harm to the people, it is a procrastination so as not to meet the demands of the demonstrators to form a government. All the scenarios carried out by the military council are lies. What happened in the sit-in today was because of the rapid support forces.
We want a civilian government that would guarantee our rights as women and that would guarantee us a decent living in a state of citizenship with rights and duties.
As the pressure mounts on the Transitional Military Council, media houses have found themselves at the receiving end. News broadcaster Al Jazeera, a Qatari television channel, said its bureau was abruptly shut down and its journalist banned from reporting in Sudan with immediate effect, without being given a reason.
Talking Sport.
That's right, let's talk sports. The eagerly awaited European Champions League final pitting Liverpool against Tottenham Hotspurs is set this weekend in Madrid, Spain.
The do-or-die match is being watched closely by football fans across the world and in Africa, where football dominates in the sports scene. We're now joined by Felix Tamzoub from our sports desk. Felix, what should we expect in this final?
Nobody knows what to expect. There are two very, very good football teams, very exciting football teams. Liverpool has been one of the best teams in England this season, almost won the league. Exciting football, always on the attack, always playing very quickly. Tottenham also quick on the break, very accurate, also very interesting style of football. And it's going to be a very interesting game, definitely.
Tamzoud, it's clear many Germans are rooting for Liverpool under coach Jürgen Klopp. Why do you think a win will be so important for Klopp?
Because Klopp has taken part in quite a few Champions League finals already, two, and he lost both of them. He took part in a couple of domestic cup finals with Liverpool, lost them too. So it's going to be his seventh cup final with Liverpool, and he would really look forward to winning it. People start tagging him as a person that loses finals and stuff like that. So in terms of Klopp's reputation, it's going to be a big one, definitely.
That's not a very good reputation. Do you think he has it this time?
I personally think they're going to win it, yes. I think Liverpool are the better team. They're in good form. They've been in good form in the last matches of the Premier League. Their style of football is very set. I don't think Tottenham has what it takes to deal with them. But it's not that determined. Like it's not a 90-10 question. It's more like a 60-40. So it's much more equal than people think.
Well, there's one country in Africa that is closely following this final, that is Kenya. There are two Kenyan players in each of the team, Liverpool striker Divock Origi and Tottenham Hotspur's Victor Wanyama. Tamsud, are you in any way surprised how the European Champions League is gaining rounds in Africa and more so in Kenya?
No, not surprised at all. The European football and Champions League in particular has been getting ever more attention internationally across the globe. I'm not surprised at all that in many African countries people are interested in the Champions League, mostly because we're seeing more and more African footballers in top levels. Wanyama is a very good example of that, and it's good for football. It adds to the excitement. More people take part, more people are interested, more people take part in the discussion on social media from all around the world. And I definitely think that the fact that African footballers get to more and more top teams, it certainly helps the profile of the game. It helps the profile of the game not only in Africa, but also elsewhere. Diversity is always a good thing. Different cultures, different ideas, different places. I'm not surprised at all. I'm very pleased about that. And I'm pretty sure most football fans are.
Yeah, it will also be an all-English final. Do you think this is something we should be expecting often in the Champions League, like teams from the same country?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I've just written a piece arguing that if the case of Germany is anything to go by, we can't really expect that. As we all remember, in 2013, two German teams played against each other, Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. And everyone was saying back then that the German football is going to take over the world, which happened 1 year later, of course, when Germany won the World Cup. But no German team has reached a European final ever since. It takes a lot more than money to succeed in football. English clubs certainly have the money, but I don't think it's as set as people think it is, to be honest. It's much more dynamic.
Thank you very much, Felix Tanzu, for that overview of the eagerly awaited final.
Zippy, I think that will be a tough crush there, Liverpool and Tottenham. And what's exciting, there are two Kenyans who will be on different teams, yeah?
Yes, actually, Jane, I was looking at the social media and many Kenyans are calling it the Mashemeji Derby, like neighbors derby.
Of course.
Because Origi comes from here and Wanyama from the other the side other of the side. Region.
It's exciting. And Zippy, which is your team?
Liverpool, for sure. I hope and pray because I would not say this on air, but I'm hoping Liverpool will take this cup.
I'm also on Liverpool because at least they have 97 points on the league. So I hope they get this trophy this time round.
Yeah, for sure. And we have many more stories we are following up. A militant group network of Niger Delta Republic fighters has threatened to declare the Niger Delta Republic on the June 1st, 2019. And we are asking, why are some groups in different parts of Africa pushing for secession?
We have Vena Ve who says, well, I can say the government of Nigeria really needs to get into dialogue with the people and see how they can get past this problem, even if it means giving them more autonomy or giving them greater share of the profit of the resources.
And there's one overview here from Gola Konyungi who says it's because the current political systems in Africa have failed woefully. Stomach politics is the main cause.
Stomach politics is the main cause. Thanks for that, Gola. We have Ebert Robert who says that's what happens when the whole is smaller than the sum of the parts. Separation, in the case, is the logical end.
And Chibuze Biafra, that's a funny name there, says bad governance and Nigeria will continue to be divided. And he's saying we are tired of these. No equal rights and equal peace. Of course, many mixed comments there from the people, Jane.
Of course, you are reacting on our Facebook page. Olisa Kabuena says, Africa was messed up by the European invaders who came in the guise of bringing civilization. They forced concocted states from many nations of different cultures and standards without the consent of the people and of those already existing nations.
So thank you very much for your comments. Continue debating on our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Jane Nyinge. Thank you so much and have a fantastic weekend.
DW. Made for Mind.